Joss Coban singing You Raise Me Up, wonderful song. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're now having another episode, episode 30 of Health and the Awakening of the Self. This program concerns itself with the health of the individual, help to restore your health and preserve your health. We give out information for that purpose. And also the other part of the program is to realize your real self as distinct from who we think we are, but we're not. 2,500 years ago, Buddha discovered that the self or the personality or the persona is only an illusionary made-up self from mental thoughts and projections. And basically, it's a persona. It covers up something else. It covers up the real self. A persona means mask or something that covers up over something. It's not the reality itself. It just covers it up. So through the process of self-inquiry, or what's called the non-dualistic teachings. In the East, they're called Vedanta, and they go back thousands of years. So, through the process of self-inquiry, we help to uncover the inner awareness of who we really are. My name is Dr. Mike. I'm a medical doctor, an MD, and a naturopath, and I've been a teacher of meditation for a good number of years. If you would like to call into this program at any time, and you can feel free to do that, you can interrupt whatever is going on. The number is 831-427-3772. That's 831-427-3772. And the email is frsc at freakradio, all one word, freakradio.org. And if you have a spiritual master you'd like to hear on this program, please get in touch with me and we'll see about putting him or her on. The slogan, as usual, of this program is, may the mind dissolve in the heart, or may the mind fall into the heart, may the mind dissolve in the beingness or the aware presence that we are. And just to remind you, you can't really realize the truth by either reading a book or listening to a radio show. But if you do the spiritual exercises that we give out here on this show, or if you do the what's called the guided meditation that we tend to give out towards the end of the show, that will help you further your consciousness into a wider space, a space of more freedom, a space of more peace, a space of more creativity, and a space of compassion. All the good qualities that life has to offer. All right. The first program we're going to do is by Master Spira, and it's entitled "Allowing the Mind to Sink into the Heart." The same title as we have for the slogan of this program.
Awake in the morning is okay. My identity, and my issues, problems, my agenda for the day. The identity is there immediately. So it's like that gap between the question of "Are you aware?" and the answer. It seems like that moment of realizing that you're awake in the morning before the identity catches up and takes over. Can you offer something maybe to do at that moment to try to stretch it a little? And
yes.
That seems like an opportune moment every day to practice this.
You know? You see, every time you say to yourself, "Am I aware?" The mind goes silent, because in order to go to the place of being aware, we go out of the mind, we go to the experience of being aware. So the question, "Am I aware?" we may think about it a bit, the mind may go around the subject for a little bit, but at some stage, in order to find the answer to that question, the mind must come to an end. And it's in that ending of the mind that there is this non-objective realization, "Yes, I am aware." And the yes is, the mind then rises again and formulates the answer. So the mind formulates the question, it thinks about it, it goes quiet, then there is the experience of being aware, and then the mind rises again to formulate the answer, "Yes." So in that timeless because the mind is not present, in that timeless pause in between the question and the answer, there is the living experience of being aware. And that is like falling asleep while remaining awake. It's like going into deep sleep in the waking state. And you can do that any time. You can be walking down the street. The circumstances don't require your mind to be focused on an object or a situation, and your mind can just pose the question, "Am I aware?" And then the mind goes on this little journey, and at a certain point the mind has to come to an end in order to answer that question. In that timeless moment, we drop out of time and space. We visit eternity in that moment. We drop out of the mind and the body. We go to the same place we go to in deep sleep. And we can go there any time we want. It's totally available. It's available 24/7 to everybody. So just get in the habit of punctuating your day. Whenever there is a moment of when your attention is available, that is when circumstances don't require your attention to be focused on an object or a situation, just get in the habit of pausing and asking yourself the question, am I aware? And allowing that question to take you to the experience of being aware. The experience of being aware of being aware. And stay there. Rest there. Until the phone goes or the your boss walks through the door or whatever it is, and then you have to start paying attention again. So, but you can do this, just make a habit of doing this. When you fall asleep at night, as you're lying there in bed, just ask yourself the question, am I aware? This time it's not necessary for the mind to formulate the answer. You just go to the experience of being aware. When I say go to, you understand what I mean. You be the knowing of being aware. And just stay there. Fall asleep like that.
So it seems like in asking that question, you evoke a process that takes you there.
It starts as a process. The process is only in the mind.
Right.
But so the mind, when we ask the question, am I aware? The mind, and I think this is probably not the case for most of us here, but a lot of people who are not so familiar with this terminology, if you ask them, are you aware, they would start thinking about it to begin with. They might have to go round the subject matter for a while with their thoughts. But sooner or later, if they were clear about the question, am I aware, their thoughts would have to arrive at the doorway with I am aware written above it. The mind would have to go through that doorway to find out, am I aware? And as it goes through that doorway, it ceases to be mind. It's like the moth that longs for the flame. The moment it touches the flame for which it longs, it ceases to be a moth. It becomes the flame. That is the moth's way of knowing the flame, by becoming it. So the mind that wants to know, am I aware, circles around the house. It comes to the door with I am aware written. As it goes through the door, it ceases to be mind and becomes, or rather is realized to be, pure awareness. Now, for those of us here, for most if not all of us here, when we ask the question, am I aware, I don't think any of us have to go on a very long journey, because we're familiar with this. We've all been asking ourselves these kind of questions for some time. So we ask ourselves the question, am I aware? We don't go to the sensation at the soles of our feet and deduce from that that I am aware. We don't go to our thoughts. We go to the experience of being aware. It's so accessible. It's the most accessible experience there is. And it's just there, wide open. The doorway is wide open. 24/7. Just become accustomed to going through the doorway and use as an aid this question, am I aware? Which is a kind of modern version of who am I? And I think a more effective and more direct version. I don't mean by that to... I don't mean by that to disparage the question, who am I? It is also a very potent question, but it's a question that has been overused and has been misunderstood for so long that we need a fresh approach to the same question. And this question, am I aware, it's so direct that there can be no misunderstanding about it. It's so clean, it's so clear, it's so straight. It just takes us straight there. Just whenever you feel inclined, just ask yourself this question and go there. Go there, be that. Just get used to being that. And begin to just begin to set up camp there until your mind is required by either for practical purposes or celebratory purposes to rise out of its source and take form and go outwards towards an object. That's fine, you let it do that, and then just become accustomed to allowing the mind to sink into the heart over and over and over again until the mind's natural place to rest is not on an object, but in its source, in the heart. That doesn't mean that it can't easily rise and leave home, and or appear to leave home and go out and attend to objects, but it, the place it likes to be is home. It's like someone who, you know, they move into a lovely apartment and their friends ask them out all the time, and this person says, no, I like staying at home now. I don't want to come out every evening of the week. I have this lovely home now. I'm just, you know, I just like living at home with my partner quietly. I don't want to go out all the time. It's like that. We we get used, the mind gets used to staying at home. It's peaceful there. It's comfortable there for the mind. It's so busy, it's so agitated that with the mind's always entertaining objects, it's so, this life the mind leads of seeking and resisting in relationship to objects, it's so exhausting for the mind. And when it discovers that it has a home, a place where it can rest, it's free, it doesn't get charged, it's easy, it's always available, it just get used to it. Just get used to staying home.
Okay, that actually was one of the exercises we're giving out tonight. It's in your quieter moments when you have time and your attention is not demanded somewhere else, you ask yourself quietly, am I aware? Am I aware? And you allow your mind to go through the process he was talking about. I'm sorry, my voice, I've got the flu and I've got a cold in my chest, so my voice is not really working too well tonight, but we'll do the best we can, and I'm going to, maybe prolong some programs or play some longer programs so I won't have to talk so much. But in any case, we're just coming up here. You might have heard me ring. I'm just coming up to play some music as the next step in the program.
Darkness stirs and waits.
Micah Crawford.
Imagination. Silently the senses abandon their defenses. Slowly, gently, night unfurls its splendor. Grasp it, sense it, tremulous and tender. Turn your face away from the garish light of day. Turn your thoughts away from cold and feeling light. And listen to the music of the night. Close your eyes and surrender to your darkest dreams. Purge your thoughts of the life in you before. Close your eyes, let your spirit start to soar. Caress you, hear it, feel it,
secretly possess you. Open up your mind, let your fantasies unwind in this darkness which you know you cannot fight. The darkness of the music of the night. Let your mind start a journey through a strange new world. Leave all thoughts of the world you knew before. Let your soul take you where you long to be. Only then can you belong to me. Floating, falling, sweet intoxication. Savor each sensation. Let the dream begin. Let your darkest eye give in to the power of the music that I write. The power of the music of the
That was Michael Crawford, a wonderful singer, singing one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's compositions from The Phantom of the Opera. I was lucky enough to see this opera in London, England, where I lived one time, and Michael Crawford was the main singer in there, as well as Sarah Brightman. We might try to get to her in a few minutes. But they're two great singers. If you ever have a chance to see that play, Phantom of the Opera, I'd advise you to go. It's just a wonderful play altogether. All right, so now we're going to go back to the spiritual side of the program. And we have a program here set up, Why Do I Feel Lonely? That's it. most people's experience in life at one point or another is feeling lonely. And the way to overcome this is to actually become more and more in you. This is an experience in your awareness, in your day-to-day awareness, is to become more closer with all forms of life, humans, animals, birds, and trees, every form of life, so that wherever you go in the world, there'll always be people, there'll always be trees, there'll always be animals. So it gets harder and harder and harder for a person to become lonely, especially when one is anchored in oneself, the self that actually permeates all living things. So that's a good antidote to loneliness, is the exercises, spiritual exercise that we give out in the program here. All right, we go to this little talk. It's only 3 or 4 minutes, and it's basically basically about loneliness.
That very experience called love is the recognition that what we are is one. And that the reason we feel lonely is because we have limited ourselves. We have allowed ourselves to believe that what I am is a sensation or a collection of sensations and thoughts. And I have isolated myself. I have built a wall around myself. And for that reason, I don't feel this connection. I've separated myself from the other, and therefore I feel lonely. In other words, could it be that this feeling of loneliness is a result of this superimposed limitation on ourself?
It could be.
And therefore the remedy for this feeling of loneliness is to discover, what am I essentially? Rather than to cure the feeling of loneliness by reaching for an object, or a substance, or a relationship, or an activity, or a state of mind, to go to the core of the feeling, which is, I am finite, I am temporary, I am separate. And discover if what you essentially are really is something temporary and finite. Because that discovery, if you discover that you are not something temporary and finite, not only will it put an end to your loneliness, or at least uproot your loneliness in time, it will begin to fade, but it will also uproot all your other feelings of fear and anxiety and sense of lack. Because all these feelings revolve around the same belief, I, awareness, am temporary and finite. So rather than trying to cure or alleviate the feeling, explore the one on whose behalf the feeling is rising. Just see this week, as we explore what we essentially are, how the quality of friendship in the group develops. Just see how friendships develop over the week. Friendships with people, most of the people here you've never met before. See what kind of quality of friendship you have with everyone here. In other words, see how this exploration impacts our feeling of loneliness or the quality of our relationships.
In a way, there's only one thing to do, to see that all these feelings of emotions or whatever, they appear. And you don't have to go, you just let them be and say.
No, but you can do a little bit more than that. Than just.
Okay, we're going to go back and have a little more music. This time Sarah Brightman is singing from the same concert, Phantom of the Opera. Maybe Michael Crawford is singing with her, I've forgotten.
Sleep, he sang to me. In dreams, he came. That voice which calls to me and speaks my name. And do I dream again? For now I find the phantom of the opera is there inside my mind. Thank you.
again with me a strange duet. My power over you grows stronger yet. And though you turn from me to glance behind, the phantom of the opera is there inside your mind.
Those who have seen your face draw back in fear. I am the mask you wear.
It's me they hear.
My spirit and my voice in one combined. The phantom of the opera is there inside my
fantasies. You always knew that man and mystery
were both in you.
And in this labyrinth where night is blind, the phantom of the opera is there inside my mind. Sing for me, sing my angel of music.
Is there the phantom of the opera?
Sing.
That was Weird and Wonderful, The Phantom of the Opera, from Michael Crawford and Sarah Brightman. Wonderful opera if you get a chance to see it. Okay, next we're going back to the spiritual part of the program now. And now we have Master Muji, and he's going to be speaking here for quite a while. So I'll interrupt his talk every 20 minutes or so to play some music. But I think the talk is quite good. It's a little slow. It's geared for, you know, for people with maybe a lower understanding. But it's very precise, and it give you good insight into some of the what self-inquiry is. So listen to it carefully. I'll interrupt maybe every 15 or 20 minutes for some music. Okay.
And I'm actually very happy that so many people felt to come today. What triggered today's satsang was a few days ago you were talking, and I had mentioned the effectiveness, the potency the directness, the immediacy of self-inquiry as perhaps the most direct and the most effective tool to the recognition of the self, of what we are. Now, and I'd said that nevertheless, it seems elusive. It seems difficult to understand. It seemed difficult to understand, and even the days, in the days of Sri Ramana Maharshi, when he was present with us on this planet, even a greater teacher as he was and is, even his own disciples found it difficult to grasp the directness and the simplicity and the power of self-inquiry. Now, there are many, many, many paths, maybe as many paths as there are seekers into the realization of the truth. Why I say this is because in each one, even if 1,000 people are practicing through the method of inquiry or any other path, no, it will still be uniquely experienced through the instrument of each body. I don't want to bring too much of that because I don't think it is so significant. I have tried somehow to present the inquiry in the most simple way, because in fact it is simple. And the truth, what we are, this is not a teaching. What you are is not a teaching. What we are is not something we are going to create or develop. You see, teachings and methods may develop, but what you are cannot develop. That is one of the fundamental pointers, that what you are is not an evolutionary outcome, that it is timelessly, eternally perfect. This is not belief. And by the time we have spent some time together today, I hope most, if not all of you, come to understand this, or have at least a better understanding of what this self-inquiry is. You see? I put it like the inquiry is like a mirror. Just like you look in a mirror and immediately you see your face, a reflection of your face. The inquiry is a bit like that. It is like somehow looking into the mirror of introspection and seeing a reflection of your pure being. You're not the one in the mirror, but the mirror enables you to both see, although it seems that your seeing is phenomenal, but at the same time it's experienced here. Just like I see my hand there, but where I perceive it is here in me. Everything is inside of us. Now, the human beings, we want to know many things in the life, but ourselves we don't know. Why? Because we take for granted ourselves, that I am me. I am me. And what is that? Well, of course, it's me. Yeah, me. So, okay, but this is your body. Your body. Is your body saying, I am me? Or is there something else or more inside the body that's saying, I am me? And this which was saying, I am me, what is that? You see? Now, of course, because we are so unused to, we're not accustomed to asking this kind of question. Because no one in our life asks us this kind of question. Your parents don't ask you. Our friends don't ask. In no institution is asked, including religious institution. Nobody asks you, who are you? So of course it feels deeply, you know, it's I call it the main assumption. We just assume that it is our body, I am my body, and my beliefs and the conditioning that arose in my body amounts to what I am. But this has not proven to be enough, because with this belief, we still struggle to be happy. We still struggle to understand who we are, what our purpose is, or whether we do have a purpose or something like this. And, you know, what brought us here? Where did we come from? Where are we going? Is there a going place after you finish this story in this body? Do you move on to something else? Because the body will fall. Then is that it? Is that all there is to us? So these are ancient questions people have been asking like that. And we have many theories. We have many ideas about life. But few know. Many beliefs, many doctrines, but few sort of know inside the heart, you see. So in spite of so much study, so much effort, so much literature, so much philosophy, so much religion, human beings still are at a loss as to who we fundamentally are. And it is not a knowledge that you're going to have in your head. Whatever we have in our head does not stay. Amnesia will take it away. Something will take it away. Is there something that cannot be taken away? That will not, even the body may get sick. Mind also can get sick. Is there something that cannot get sick? Body can die. Mind can become deluded and despondent and in full despair, and we can go crazy. Is there something that is not touched by any of this thing? So I felt it was a good subject again to start in as simple a way as I could, to try and look a bit into this subject and to ask you to participate with me in this exploration. Not lecture, and to look together to see what we can discover together, like that. Today, yeah, because for some years now I've been talking on this subject. It's the only subject I talk about, and still some have not grasped it, even in spite of many years, and not quite, kind of get it, but not really. So, is it that we don't understand because the subject is so complex? We don't understand because, you know, you have to be a very, very strong meditator. You have to do the work of a lot of spiritual, background and exercises in the past to be eligible. To be a candidate for this freedom, and perhaps you have not done enough. Why is it difficult? You see? And what is difficult? What is difficult? Is it because the subject, the whole quest is to come to a true and profound experiential understanding of what I am, what you are. Why to even do that? Why to bother even? Well, until we do know in the heart, we continue to be restless and dissatisfied, happy only momentarily, mostly pursuing one thing after another, imagining that something will fulfill us, and find after a short time it does not. You see, so I feel it is a very crucial subject for exploring. It's the most important subject, I feel, in the human kingdom. But of course, many may disagree. Some people may not even have any slightest interest in this at this moment. But at some point, life will compel you to look beneath the surface to find out, to get more out of this existence than merely material comforts and a human company and so on. It must be something much more profound than this. So, where do we start now? I told you that I did not do any preparation at all for this. As many of you will know, that is very much my style. I can't prepare and I didn't prepare, so things become, it's fresh. We have to be fresh, they see. Because if I prepare something, you may learn something. I've not been able to do this. Even from my days of teaching at college, I was not able to prepare one class. So obviously I chose subjects that were not too mental. Like art was my subject, which was more intuitive and more kind of. But still, even with the intuitive arts, you need to do some preparation. And I got away with it for a little bit. And then after a certain point, the requirements were so demanding that it just, I had to drop the whole thing. Something inside knew that life, I could not be, it had to be, everything is spontaneous. It was not a belief, it was not an attitude. I just could not help it. It had to be just, it has to be now. Something, it's just now, it's fresh. It wasn't a philosophy, it wasn't a belief, it wasn't that I thought about it. I was just not able to function like that. To plan ahead, in any meaningful, deep, rigid way. At best I could manage was to make some feeble sketches, which themselves I saw went through innumerable changes before. You see? So I feel the most truthful way of encountering each other is to come fresh, empty. And then what happens? Something else happens out of the spontaneity of us being together. We are in real time with the universe. Because the universe is not planning somewhere down the road. It will produce seeds that will take time to sprout, but it doesn't plan how those seeds will sprout. All of life is one thing. This is another thing that you're going to find out, not as a teaching, but as discovery. I don't know how much today. Today I only want to focus on the fundamental thing, on the basic thing. We don't need to know so many things. We just become confused. You see? You just need to know the right thing, the thing you need to know now. You see, you don't need 50 keys to open one lock. You need the right key. You understand? You can have 1,000 keys and you'll just be 1,000 times confused, more lost. You just need the right key. So today, I'm hoping that we have found the right key. To open what? The mystery into our own nature, like that. So it sounds huge thing. But I say it's the most simple thing. One, why? Because what we are trying to find is already here. First thing, isn't it? What you are trying to find is not somewhere in the next room or someplace in some divine vault waiting to be discovered. It is right here. It has always been right here. And what you're going to find is that it didn't arrive here. Didn't arrive here. Because it is infinite. Now, I am saying it is infinite. But you are going to have to discover if it is infinite or not. If I only tell you it is infinite and you only accept it infinite, you're only parroting my words. You have to discover yourself that it is infinite. And I intend today to prove to you that it is so and that you are that. So it's a big order, no? I come to like this today. And we have to prove like this. And also I'm not prepared. So let's see how it go now, okay? everyone speaks some language. Even deaf people have to learn some language. Everyone has a wide language to communicate something. Everybody has to speak some language. In order for any language to be spoken, whether from a deaf person who is doing this thing and this and like this, or with words or something to be spoken, something has to be there. First thing has to be there. First thing of any language, any language at all, okay? First thing that has to be there is the sense I has to be there. You must have first a sense that you exist, the one who wishes to communicate something. Only when the first arising, the sense I, or the intuition, the feeling, the sense I am, the knowledge I am, means I exist. Only after I exist is formed can the sense you come. I must arise before you. You cannot arise before I. We're going to show you. I must be there because the sense you takes its meaning from I. I see you. I cannot refer to you without having a sense of me or I. This is a fundamental thing. Okay? You can try it. Try and speak without you. Without the sense, yes, you know, what I want to do is what I am trying to tell you, what I believe, what I went, what I think. I is the subject behind almost everything you say or think, not only say, but think. I am not feeling well today. I am not able to come. I think I've understood this more closely than I must be there. You see? Take any language. Find a dictionary for this language. Thousands of words are there. But no one is more important than I. None of them have any meaning without I. At least the sense. Who is speaking? Who is understanding? Again, it is myself. I. So that is the most important principle of language, of the sense of self-awareness, even if no one else in the world exists but you. You'll be aware of yourself. You'll be aware of the feeling, I exist, I am. Even without the words, you would know you exist. This knowing that you exist is the feeling I am inside the body. Where did you get this feeling I am from? Was it from your parents? Where did it come from? Your name you received from your parents. But no parent has ever christened their child I am or I. Nobody. Okay? Let's call this baby George. Let's call this baby Suzanne. For a while they're calling, hello Suzanne, hello Suzanne, hello Georgie, hello Georgie. This thing doesn't know I am George. Just looking. It responds to feeling of warmth, of love, of milk. It doesn't know it's called milk. It doesn't know this is mother. It doesn't know this is father. It doesn't know anything at all. But it is somehow naturally self-aware. Soon, the sense begins to, the consciousness is developing. And the first development, it becomes aware of itself in the form I am. It doesn't say it. You see, the I am is there before the words I am come. The I am is there as an awareness of yourself, the sense I am. That is the first knowledge. That is the first knowledge. You see, as I said before, if nobody else on the planet was here, you will still know you are. You will still have the feeling, well, I'm here. If you woke up one day and there's no one, the whole planet has disappeared, at least the people, you will say, where did they go? You didn't say, where did I go? You will know, I am. This I is there. It witnessed the absence or the presence of others. I must be there. Okay? I'm keeping repeating this I, because it is the fundamental precept, the fundamental, the essence of language itself is I. It's the one who speaks, the one who listens, the one who lives, the one who thinks, I die, I go, I come, I sleep, I'm awake, I. I see you, I see your sister, I see my mother, I see I is there. So, as soon as the I arises, first the form is there, the consciousness, which is the knowing capacity, has to develop sufficiently to be aware of itself in the form I am. Just I am. When it believes this I am, it needs a body also to feel I am. It needs a body to feel I am. As soon as the body comes and the feeling I am, this body come. The feeling I am, this body come. Second one. Once it knows I am this body, other knowledge can start to come on top. That is the root knowledge. Other knowledge, this is my mother, this is my father. You see, otherwise the father has no meaning. The parents give birth to the child, but the child gives birth to the parents also, because until the child is born, you are not a father and you are not a mother. When the child comes, then the mother comes, then the father comes. You see? So this sense I is fundamental. One I in each form, the sense I am must arise. The sense i.e. if you cannot speak, the sense I am, meaning self-awareness must be there. Then self-awareness believes I'm a woman because I've got female body. I'm a man, I've got male body. You see? The sense I am is not the body. But when it believes it's the body, then it believes it's the body type. The body type is male or female. It says I'm a man or I'm a woman. This is the beginning of concepts. Why? Because the I am is not the body. The I am, you may say, is a kind of intuitive knowingness. You may call spirit, you may call the sense of being. It is not an object. It's a sense. It is actually consciousness that is speaking like this. So this is the first thing. You cannot say, I am not. Because to say, I am not, you must be there to say, I am not. Okay? So, we will come to a bit more about these things. Now, if the sense I am is not the body, and if it is not the body, and it is not other thoughts that come like, I'm a girl, and girls wear pink, and boys wear blue, and then I go to school, my mother is this, my mother, my parents are Christians, my mother is Christian, my father is Hindu, I am, don't know what that is, whatever, like this. You see, this is the building of concepts. And with the building of ideas or concepts, then I am, which is none of them, embrace the concepts. And an identity is formed out of this. And every identity is unique. Every identity is unique. Every circumstance is unique. In the same way you go to bed and you dream, a very unique dream, that even someone you love, your twin or your beloved is next to you, they can't share the same dream with you. Your dream is unique. In the same way, your perception of the waking life is unique in the sense of how things feel for you, how they taste for you, what you think they are. Some days you like something, sometimes you don't like. The same thing like that. Nobody can control it. You say, somebody come to you and they say, you know, okay, you know, what temperature do you, suppose you have someone, a good servant, and they say, you know, what temperature do you like your bath to be? You're going to go to a bath. And what temperature do you like? You say, I like it to be 38 degrees. 38 degrees. Tomorrow they come, you say, it's too cold. But you said 38 degrees. It's 38 degrees. You cannot be consistent about this thing because your body's changing, your feelings are changing. So whatever you regard yourself to be, even this cannot stabilize. Things are changing. Your moods change, your feelings change, climate change, people you're thinking change. So nothing is so steady in this field. Yet we seem to be living in one common earth. One earth. Right now nearly 8 billion human beings are on this planet. And we all have the same one house. All of us are living in the same one house called Earth. And it has to cater for all these different ways of being. All these different ways of being. Now, let's come back to our point. The sense I am. So the parents did not give you. Nobody taught you the feeling I. Where it come from? It is synonymous with existence. It is the way in which consciousness, which is what we are fundamentally, this is the way that consciousness announces itself in the body, the feeling I am. I exist means I exist. If you don't exist, nothing exists for you. Only after this I exist feeling come, then other things can come. The sense you can come, world can come, life can come, time come, change come, all of this comes like that. You are the witness of them. They all report to you, to your consciousness. It is you who perceive them. But one thing went missing is that we forgot how important we are to our perceiving. Everything depends upon your perception. Everything depends upon the way you perceive them. That is how important you are. You feel that, you know, you study and learn many things, and you believe or disbelieve many things, but in the end, you're experiencing a world according to you, according to your conditioning, what you believe it is, like that. Let's just take a second.
Okay, we'll take a little break at this point and we'll play some music. So we have Sarah Brightman lined up here. She's going to sing All I Ask of You. Very nice song.
Forget these wide-eyed fears. I'm here, nothing can harm you. My words will warm and calm you. Let me be your freedom. Let daylight dry your tears. I'm here with you beside you, to guard you and guide you. Let me be your light, your safe
no one will find you. Your fears are far behind.
All I want is freedom, a world with no more night, and you always beside me to hold me and to hide me.
And say, that's all I ask of you.
Say you shall be one lifetime. See the world and I will follow you.
Share each day, each night.
Okay, that was Sarah Brightman singing All I Ask of You. I don't know the gentleman who she's singing with. I can't find his name on the label anywhere. So I'm not going to be able to give you that information right now. But anyway, it's if you have a few years ago, they made the second movie of Phantom of the Opera. And, you know, if you have a chance to rent that at the rental store, I'd advise you, and you like that kind of music, I'd advise you to rent it for a few days. It's wonderful, wonderful music. Okay, now we're going back to Master Muji. We're going to pick him up where he left off on his talk. It's an interesting talk, at least I find it interesting, and it explains something pretty well. So listen carefully.
We say I. We say I. I think. I believe. I want. I do. I don't do. I accept. I don't accept. I. Then I ask you, what exactly is I? Now, if you answer me with anything I tell you, like I am consciousness, if you try it, I am consciousness. You may say the words, I am consciousness, and from the point of view of words and language, it is correct. Yet it is not true for you yet. It's just words. Very often it's just words. I am George. What does it mean, I am George? Who the hell is George? I am George. What it means, I am George. I'm Susan. What is Susan? It's just name. The I am is there even before the name come, because without the I am consciousness, the name has no meaning. It's the I am consciousness that accepts any name. You can change your name. You can change even your belief, your religion, your country. You can change your partner. You can change many things. But something fundamentally remains unchanged in you. We want to find out what that is. Not intellectually, but experientially, we need to find this out. Because until we do, we are feeling that we are restless. You imagine something is going to make you happy, But after a short while, it doesn't make you happy. You look for something else to make you happy. And everything is only for a time. And everything is only in time. I can say in a way that we are three-aspected. The physical aspect of ourself is this body. The body was born in time, lives in time, and departs in time. That aspect of ourself, you may say like this, as a birth, as a life, as death, you may say this thing. Mind also. The sense of mind, there's no thing such as just mind. Mind is only a relationship of yourself, which is consciousness or the beingness, with thought, together, or identity. That is also in time. That is also belonging to time. And that is also not stable. It is always changing. That from where the body and the mind emerge, like a tree emerging out of a seed. That from where they come, the seed of them, we call the pure self. This is the goal or the aim of all spiritual seeking, to find where you come from, your source. Most seeds, as soon as they germinate, the seed is finished. It starts to become something else. The difference with the self is that when it germinates into a living being, it does not change. It remains the source. You see? If we learn anything, whatever we have learned or believe, came after the I, after the I thought, the I concept, the first arising, the first born. It is referred to as consciousness, or the dynamic consciousness, the creative consciousness. That creative consciousness comes out of a deeper consciousness which does not do anything. It simply is. It just is. It's not a doer. It simply is. That is the ultimate discovery of all spiritual striving. Is to discover the what is, that you may call the absolute, the ultimate principle, the supreme being, God, you can call like that. And what is our relation with this God? Are we only the creation of this high God? Do we have more of a status within this God? Are we simply a part of the God? Are we one with the God? Are we as great as the God? We have to find it out. Today, how are we going to do it now? Because the belief is there, because the fundamental belief is there. First I am, and then the I am splits into I am the body. The I am sense exists by itself. It does not need anything. But it's as though it is compelled by some power to identify with the body. The identification with the body makes room for other thoughts to come. Other thoughts plus the I am the body idea create the sense of an individual, a person, and because the body is growing and the conditioning and the experiences are changing, we have a sense of growth like this, and we feel that we are living, growing, evolving, evolutionary being like this. But there is another dimension inside us which is not growing. Growth takes place in it and is perceived in it and by it, but does not affect it. This is why you are able to perceive subtle things, and you're going to see that you're perceiving and have the capacity to perceive a lot broader than we presently do. Everything that you see, even the most subtle things, like there are thoughts and sensations which have no name yet, but you perceive them because of the subtlety of consciousness, you perceive them. There are some feelings you are not able to really put any name to them. You are the perceiver of them. Subtle thought, sensation, imagery, feeling, projections, discriminative powers, the power to discriminate between fantasy and actuality. All these things, a capacity nobody taught you. It simply arises within your own consciousness. This is the marvelousness of the consciousness, the root consciousness. The root consciousness is there, whether it is identified with the body and the body's characteristics or conditioning or not. One of the great steps of spiritual discovery is when we are able to recognize the sense I am without combining it with any other thought or feeling. It's as though you sieve it out, and so only the feeling I am remain without connecting with other concepts. But because this was begun early in the childhood of one lifespan, it seems very strongly embedded in the consciousness, I am the body, I am a woman, I am a man. In the beginning, for many people, there is no aspiration, there is no desire to go beyond this belief, which seems like it's an unchallenged fact that I am a woman. It seems sometimes more loud than I am consciousness. But first you had to be consciousness before you had the thought you're a woman or you're a man. Do we understand this or not? Okay. Before any understanding came, the first understanding must be, I am. I exist. No other knowledge is more important than the conscious knowing, I am. Only when the idea, I am the body, I'm a man, and so on come, along with our cultural conditionings, our religious conditioning, political conditioning, comes the pressure to perform according to our cultural norms and traditions and so on. So the first, the most important thing is to understand what this I am is, because it's not enough. You say I am, everyone says I am, but few understand what I am is. And it feels, why the need to understand? And the reason why we ask why the need to understand is because it feels sufficient enough that I know I'm a man, I'm a woman, what more do we want from the life, you know? I know I'm a man, I never question, never doubt if I'm a man, and maybe I'm a woman or something. Why should I say, you know, who am I? Why would I even bother with this? So this question is not going to have a universal appeal in the beginning for many people. It's only somewhere along the line, and even with many religious people, spiritual people who have been practicing for many years, it may not be a path that they're aware of. They still feel, I am a servant of God, I'm a pilgrim, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian. They use the same I am, and we say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm Hindu, I'm atheist, or so on. But what does it really mean? I am is what? Because most people, they don't understand. They say, I am is me, the person. I am is the person, me. I am a Christian, I'm Muslim. And it seems it's enough. You see, why would we go further than this? Isn't that enough of a fact? Isn't enough of a fact to say, you know, I'm a Jamaican, I am, you know, 42 years old, I am this thing, you know, because it's accepted everywhere. It's your credit card, it's accepted everywhere. This one, no one ever challenges it. But it is put now, when you say I, what do you take your I to be? Because, as I said before, it is written, God says, I am. I am. But the devil also says, I am. The ego also say, I am. Even a mosquito believes, I am. Everything feels, life says, I am. Inside the farm or something like that. No? Hmm? So we are just trying to see, which I am are you speaking from? Mm-hmm. When you say, I am. And if you listen keenly, you'll see almost always, listen to, go to any restaurant, sit down quietly, listen to conversations, I did this, and see when people speak as I, what are they referring to, and you'll soon see it is, I am this body, I am this person, I am my conditioning. That is as far as we go. It will not be enough to recognize the truth on such a flimsy assumptions. It's very important to understand what I am actually is experienced inside this body when you say I am. And we are going to go now into that. I want you first to understand the difference between an assumption, because mostly we are learning from second-hand concepts that's handed down to us that we have never challenged. We just, like a child can learn to speak a language without understanding what the real meaning is, just by growing up in that environment. We use words, we have a sense of what they mean. We have a sense of when you say I, what it means. It means me. And beyond this me sense, no one looks further into this me sense. What is me? Who am I? Again, why? Because nobody wants to know, particularly. If you look deeper than that, people think you're a freak. If you look more deeply, then, you know, who are you? Well, my name is so-and-so-and-so. I'm a 23-year-old woman from Brazil. I studied here at this academy. I did this, blah, 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 blah. And I am applying for this job. Nobody goes further than this to question you. You see? This is all you need. This is your password to be a visible being in this world. To enter the game of transacting and interacting with other beings. It's only enough to know your gender, date of birth, study, what you've done, experience. Boom, it's enough. Here we are proceeding more deeply. When you say I, what does it mean? And this is the birth of inquiry. The inquiry looks at, when we all say I, what is the implication of I? It is not merely a mental study or a mental exploration or psychological or intellectual. It is a research, an exploration into the living truth of what we are. You see? Now, I start with a simple exercise. If someone came and said, you know, excuse me, there's a Volkswagen car just parked outside here. Would the owner please remove it? Whose car is it? Somebody may say, oh, sorry, it's mine. You will not say, it's me. You will say, it is mine. You will not say, it is me. There is a clear difference. It belongs to me. Use the word mine. Mine is related to I. Me also related to I. It belongs to me. Mine means it belongs to me. My. Mine. You can also say, this is my family. My family. Not me. Not me. My family. They are connected with me. They belong to me. My family. You can say, my body is tired. My, not me. You follow? My body was exhausted. So something is aware of body and exhaustion. It is not the body and it is not exhausted. It says the body's exhaustion. It says my body was exhausted. So again, my, I. What is saying my body? It can also say that my sight in this eye, in the left eye,
is not very strong. It's very weak. It's a functioning about 60%. In the right eye, it's about, I'd say, 85%. So it observes sight even. It knows the strength of sight or the weakness of sight. It is not the sight. It says, my sight is not as good as it used to be. It also can say, my memory is not as good as it used to be. It is not memory. It knows memory. It observes memory. It says, I used to be able to remember every person's name here, if I'm told it. For 1 year, I would not forget the names. Now, I can't remember even two or three. It knows memory and the abilities of memory. If memory has faded, it observes memory. My memory. You follow me or not? Okay, so memory it is not. Senses it is not. Family it is not. This is my religion. My religion. Not me. My chosen religion or whatever. Okay? Some people say, my ego is very strong. My ego. Not me. What is this me? My ego, not me. Who's speaking? My ego, not me. Okay? My relationship is not flowing very well at the moment. We had a beautiful relationship 6 months ago, but now it's just completely falling apart. Relationship, I am not. Oh, my life is over, my life is over. Lost my husband, has left me, my children are gone, my life is my life. Who speaks, my life is over? I am not over. My life as is conceived, as whatever shape, that is probably going to change. And also somebody say, come on, George, Norris, come on, Susan, why you speak like that? You're only speaking from an emotional state. It's not true. Yes, but you know, okay. That's, my emotions are a bit like that. Emotions, you're not. My emotion. I am not emotion also. What is left now? Oh, my breathing is very heavy. My heart is beating very strong. My heart, not me. My emotions, I'm a very emotional kind of person. My emotions are like this. My emotion, you're not emotion. My breath is getting weaker. Okay? Hospital, I have to get an appendix operation. They put the gas, I'm breathing. I see, I am losing consciousness. I am watching consciousness go, who is I? Who is I? When any of these, I can say, I am not. They depend upon me. I am the witness of them. I am the seeing. I am the witness of them. They are not witnessing me. I am looking at my hand. My hand is not looking at me. This is my autobiography, not me. So, we go through everything, not merely the body, not the vital force, not the breathing, not the senses, not intellect, not the memory, you know? My mind creates a lot of fantasies. Fantasy, create, mind, not me. Who is me? So, for a moment, leaving all these that you say belong as mine. My house burnt down. No more. Am I burnt down?
Who am I? Now, looking at all these things, my life, my dreams, my future, my past, I don't have a good past, I had a troubled past, time, all of this, not me. I'm the weakness of them. So let's leave them all aside for a moment. What remains is the sense I, or I am. Take a moment. Feel this sense I am.
Okay, that was Master Muji talking. I think we'll continue with his talk on maybe the next show or a coming up show. But right now, we're taking a break. We'll go back to hearing some music. This time I have Andre Bocelli and Sarah Brightman singing Time to Say Goodbye, one of the great songs.
Partirò.
was Andre Bocelli and Sarah Brightman. Time to say goodbye. So I'm apologize again for my voice. I've got a touch of the flu. It's affecting my lungs and my voice. All right, so we'll move over now to Eckhart Tolle. He's going to just talk about... the title is, What is Enlightenment Like? So he's going to explain a couple of things to us.
What I'd like to do is ask you some questions about how your perception works. So specifically, after the experience of your awakening, how now do you experience sensory information? And how is it different from before? Sounds, tastes?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. After the kind of shift in consciousness happened, all I knew was that from one day to the next, suddenly everything was peaceful. All sense perceptions happened within a very peaceful field. But I couldn't have said very much at that time, except I was anxious, depressed for many years, and now I'm at peace. I could have said that, and I said it, but I don't know why. I also said that many times. I don't understand it. I didn't understand it at all. I didn't realize at the time what had happened was that my thought processes had become reduced, whereas before my mind was agitated, hyperactive, which is the case with many people these days. And to a large extent, my mind activity was self-torture and continuous projection into future, which of course generates more fear and anxiety. And then suddenly, from living with an agitated mind, living with a very benign mind, and I realized much later that the reason why there was that peace was that my thought processes had become reduced by about 80%. And since then and up to now, the way in which I perceive things, the world, nature, people, is still very much through stillness. In other words, while I perceive, there isn't a lot of mind activity that comments on what I'm perceiving. There isn't a lot of labeling of sense perceptions. They're just there. Not a mental voice saying this, that, that's this, or a mental voice taking a standpoint in relation to what I'm perceiving, a personalized standpoint, my personal relationship to this, what's happening around me at this moment. And then that, of course, is the root of this incessant mind activity, because there is a mind-generated me, a self, which personalizes every experience and interprets and judges and labels and conceptualizes every perception and makes it fit in to its mind-made sense of self and its story, which makes up its identity. And all that is the continuous mental noise. So most people live trapped in the mental noise, and what they perceive is they perceive as if they were looking through a very dense screen of words, images, concepts, in other words, mind activity. And what happened to me after the shift then was that had become reduced to very little. So a lot of the time when I walk around the city or drive, or when I sit with someone, looking at someone, listening to someone, or as I like to do, sit in public places like cafes. I love to just sit and watch people. I also, of course, feel very deeply about nature. To simply be there as an observing presence without the need to call anything or anybody anything, just allow everything and every being to be as it is. There's nothing I can add to it by interpreting it. Now, many people would not want to go there because they are so identified with thought processes, so they would think, well, the thought made me would think it would lose itself or lose something very valuable if it stopped interpreting, judging, labeling, because to the mind it seems when I stop all that, I won't know anything anymore. I won't know what's going on anymore. I need to know what's going on. So whenever people meet each other, then there's immediately mental judgments come in, and that's part of the labeling process. And perhaps Jesus was referring to that when he said, judge not. All that's judging is its mind activity, its labeling. And so it's such a relief to be able to be without that continuous interference. And the amazing thing is that you do not become stupid or unconscious. In fact, you're much more awake in that state than you are in the state of identification with mental noise. So much so that one could almost say, compared to that state of simply being present with what is without compulsively labeling, if you ever should need labels, they'll be there. But when labels are not needed, to a large extent, you're free. Or if labels should arise occasionally, they are recognized as mental labels, and you don't necessarily believe in them or are identified with them, so they don't contribute to any sense of self anymore. So it's not that you become unconscious or ignorant. Only from the point of view of the thinking mind, which only knows thought, then yes, one could say that it's like becoming ignorant, but only from the point of view of thought. So with this comes the wonderful realization there is a vast realm of consciousness beyond thought. Thought is a tiny manifestation of a vast consciousness that is your essence. And most people only know that tiny manifestation. It's not separate, because consciousness embraces everything, is everything. Thought is only a particular form that consciousness takes. So not to be trapped in that anymore, that tiny manifestation of consciousness, not that it will never operate again, no, it can and does still operate, but you're no longer trapped in it, so it doesn't give you your sense of self anymore. It's not there in thought and all the emotions that accompany thought. It's not there where you're seeking your identity or to enhance your identity through adding more content to your mind. And so when that stops, oh, suddenly you realize that you can simply be present here, fully awake, alert, and even know, but not know through concepts or labels, you know, without needing words. So there is a deeper knowing that can operate and does operate in that state, in which thought activity can still happen when it's needed. In fact, thought then becomes actually quite inspired insights, realizations suddenly, because they come out of that field of no thought. When thought becomes trapped in itself, you go round and round and round, and it's a continuous circle of largely useless and, to a large extent, destructive thinking. Psychologists found, even those who are not into anything spiritual, they looked at thought processes and found that something like 98% of our thought processes are completely repetitive. The same things go through mind again and again. And for many people, what they thought 10 years ago, the same thoughts are still going through their mind, conditioned, totally identified with the conditioning of the mind, the conditioned mind. And so you see it in relationships where people act out their conditioning continuously. You can see it with couples. If you had recorded what they quarreled about 5 years ago, you could replay it. It's the same thing they're talking about and quarreling about now. Just one example. So that's to become free of the compulsion to label and ultimately to think. So to realize that it is possible to be conscious without thought, to be awake without thought. And compared to that state of wakefulness, the state of identification with thought is like dream world, like being trapped in a dream. And that's the reason, I believe, why the word awakening and awake is so important and has been for a long time in spiritual language. Buddhism itself is about being awake. Buddha, the root means the one of that word. It's not a name, it's the root of Buddha means to be awake from Sanskrit. So really, Buddha, rather than being a person, Buddha is the state of being awake, a kind of personification of the state of wakefulness, which means not identified with thought. One could say, although all these words are never totally right, rising above thought, one could say the next step in evolution for humankind is to rise above thought, whereas up till now, humans have been totally identified with thought. That's the state of unconsciousness, complete unconsciousness.
Okay. Yeah, that was interesting enough. So we'll move over to some music now. And we are on Sarah Brightman is the star of the evening. So she's going to sing for us now. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
The truth is I never let you. Oh, much. There's nothing more I can think of to say to you. But all you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true.
Again, that was Sarah Brightman singing Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. It's from the opera written again by Andrew Lloyd Webber called Vita, I think it's called. Anyway, it's a very, very beautiful song, very beautiful singer. And now we'll just coming to the end of the today's show, which was 2 hours. Tomorrow we'll be here again. Hopefully at 7 to 8 o'clock. And the last piece I have to play for you is, there's an exercise in it. We've already gone through one exercise. That's Master Spiro. He talked about using that phase, am I aware? And following that inside. Remember we talked at the beginning of the show on that one. So that's one exercise. And this other one now is another exercise, I believe, inherent in this one too. And it's called Watch the Watcher, Watch the Watcher. So I'll ring the bell here so you know there's an exercise in it.
When I ask the question, who is observing, and if I'm observing my feelings, and then I'm trying to ask myself, well, who is observing the feelings? I find that my attention sort of automatically goes to the center of my body, and I have a feeling of observing from there.
Yes.
And I'm thinking that's a kind of a trick, because if it's in the body, It must be something in the mind.
Yes, this is good. If it is felt like the observing is coming from the belly, for instance, this is a thought, no? Yeah, something also is observing that sensation, that perhaps all of this, perhaps you're identifying where your emotional energy is sitting, and it feels like that's where you are, but that's just a thought also, no? Something observes that. So much so that if the feeling shifts and went into your left knee, it was okay, now it's gone into the left knee. So it cannot be that, you see. That's some phenomenon. So something witnesses that. And constantly you're being thrown back onto the witnessing itself rather than what is being watched. Watch the watcher is the invitation, you see.
But that seems to be impossible. But is that...
No. That's already you're jumping the gun.
Yeah.
You know. Really accept this invitation. Something says, observe the observer. And somehow, if you go too much into the intellect with it, with the mind with it, then it becomes very mindy. But if you simply become quiet with that and allow this question to really reveal itself, you see. Yeah. Something happens in that. That which is observing all else, can that itself be observed? What is it? If you say, well, there's nobody there, and there's, then it's almost that you're answering from someone else's comment. Be fresh with it. Let this question happen inside like it's the first time you're hearing it. That which is observing all else, can that itself be observed, you see? Test it out. Is there an entity behind the observing, watching? Is there something? Prior to observing, that within which even the power to observe is observed. Don't go upstairs, as I say, it's just allow that. Don't give any image to it, because that's also another tendency, is to create a kind of a little gremlin or something who's behind the curtains looking at everything. But this is only another thought, it cannot be. All this question is throwing you back, throwing the attention back, before even attention arose, you see. That which watches even attention or inattention, can it be known? See, can it be known conventionally? Can it be known like objectively, I know this? Can it be known? You can answer this question. Where are you looking from? You see? And as what are you looking? Let's remember also that the ego, the idea we have of self or a self-image, is also capable of observing. But as I said, it observes with self-interest, meaning that whatever is going on, it's comparing to see if it benefits me or if it doesn't benefit me. So that's definitely a kind of entity, a kind of person, a kind of... If there is identity, there is an I entity. You see? Find this I entity if you can do it. Is it existing or is it merely a thought? Don't be lazy about it. Why I say this? Because somehow so powerful is this question that when asked it seems as though something doesn't want you to find out. It's almost like it's going to keep swapping this question with, you know, searching for a handbag or something. It will go off onto some other kind of thing. It's like to focus on this question, to hold this question, seem like something goes a bit wobbly. And I say, what is watching even this wobbliness, you see? And immediately, when recognized, there is a sort of steadiness, you see, that is present. Even that also is watched, you see? And obviously that watching is taking place in you. Now I say, don't give any image to this you. Just feel it. It's not the form, because the form also is observed. And the function in the form is also observed. What observes this, you see? And to add more frustration to you, I say, I don't want your answer. Because the answer will only be another concept again. So we are throwing it out. What is important is the question itself, you see. That which observes all else. Observing all else, it's finding out also that all else are just thoughts. What one is observing is just conditioning, habit, education, shapes the way in which you are perceiving. Unless mind names an action as an action, it is not an action, in fact. You can say, oh, how many things are happening? You can say, what is your answer? Can there be a fixed answer? You can say, uncountable movements are taking place, but someone else might say, nothing is happening. Unless the mind says an action has taken place, registers it as an action, it does not leave any footprints in the consciousness that an action has occurred. It's just nature functioning. So this is already something, some selection. Unless it mind arises as I do and I don't, I think, I want. Inspect these statements and see if they are, if there's truly an I who wants, an I who does. Go against the grain. Go upstream. Be a salmon. Check out. Don't just go simply because we have just been told, okay, this is it, and you just accept it. It's like that. Check it out for yourself, you see. Something is saying, from the birth of this body, you may say, something has been saying, I, millions and millions of times. But when asked, what is I? Suddenly we develop some stutter. What is I? So for the time being, I call it the great assumption. Until it's clear for you what is contained in that sense, I examine it, scrutinize it, probe into it. What is found? So in some beings, this has been very clear. It is discovered that I itself is a thought. Perhaps the first and most intimate thought. Because something is earlier than I that watches even the sense I. Inclined to feel that we have to constantly be watching for what is awareness and what is not. Mm-hmm. But this is false.
Okay, we've come to the end of another show. I enjoyed being with you. I'm sorry about my cold. Hopefully it'll go in a few days. And I hope you enjoyed some of the show and learned one or two things. And we'll be back again tomorrow at 7 to 8 o'clock. So if you're not too busy, I'll see you then at that time. And we'll go out with Sarah Brightman and Josh Cobran. They're singing. Not sure what they're singing. Anyway, it'll be nice.
Anywhere.